finally, I did a quick count before we started the call, and we have 37 of our member organizations registered for today's call. Well over 140 people registered for this conversation. And as of right now, it looks like we have about 63 different phone lines on the call, and I imagine that there's a number of you that have multiple people gathered around a single phone. So quite a few individuals engaging in today's conversation, which is wonderful. It means it's timely. It means it's meaningful. So something I'd like folks to think about in the back of your mind is whether or not we want to consider hosting a regular call for this group around these types of topics, whether that's data governance or data quality, informatics more generally, or IT, you know, wherever the wind may blow us. So be thinking about that, and if that's something that you're interested in, I'm hoping we'll have a few moments at the end of the call. Maybe we'll reserve 5 minutes just to float that idea and see what the group thinks. And if you don't have an opportunity before we adjourn today to share your perspective on that potential, then you can feel free to email me directly here at the Alliance, or if my email's not handy, then you can email us at info@healthplanalliance.org and let me know what you think about that idea. So with that, this call was scheduled in response to a very active discussion forum thread from June. And in that discussion forum thread, the team from Health New England posted a question of their Alliance peers wondering who has data quality management programs in place and what types of problems do they focus on solving, and how does that translate in terms of which teams are involved, what kind of tools people are looking to invest in, et cetera. So I've asked Health New England to kind of kick off the discussion to just articulate, you know, what was the motivation behind that original post, what types of challenges is that team looking to solve, and then from there, Don Hufford from Western Health was one of those who had responded that Western Health does have a data quality management program in place that they're continuing to develop and is willing to share, you know, what they've done thus far. So then we can kick it over to Don and have him kind of walk us through that. And then we'll be opening it up and hoping that other folks will have additional questions and also potentially ideas and contributions to the discussion. So with that, Ding and the team from Health New England, if you guys want to kick us off there, then we'll get this conversation going.
Thanks, Kristen. This is Chris Jasinski. I'm the Director of Healthcare Informatics at Health New England. Health New England is a small health plan located in Springfield, Massachusetts. We have somewhere roughly around 220,000 lives that we cover, and we're in three different lines of business. Jiang Du, our data quality analyst, is the individual who started off the thread a couple months back. And what initially started this, Health New England for the past year has been engaged in trying to establish a formal data governance program for our organization. The business has been suffering or experiencing a lot of data integrity issues, inconsistency in reporting results, inefficiencies in creating data extracts. And we've tried to put a program in place, an enterprise-wide program, to put some controls and processes in place to address those data integrity problems. And we established a data governance committee earlier this year in February, focused very much on data quality, metadata management, master data management, all while we are overhauling our data infrastructure and building a new data warehouse. And we've been focusing very, very heavily on data quality because of those aforementioned problems. And we have a lot of resources in place to help to start to address some of the quality issues that we see. I should also say, as part of that data governance initiative, Health New England has identified business data stewards from across multiple areas in our organization. It's the first time we've ever done that. And we have begun to, their responsibility as data stewards is to ensure the quality of data that they're responsible for, the content, and the defining of that data. And that has been a very slow process for us, as well as the overall data governance process, because before before this year, before 2017, we really have not, we've never had defined business data stewards, and never really had the business take on the ownership and the responsibility of data quality. So this new relationship that we have that we're building between our data management department and the business is focused on trying to improve overall data quality while we are building metadata for the organization, and we are overhauling our overall data infrastructure. So out of that, with this focus on data quality, this is where Jang put the questions out to the group. We are in the process of trying to better understand what a program would look like here at Health New England, whether it's an enterprise level program or it's focused locally, either at very specific business units or at specific products. And we were very curious as to what other health plans have done in this particular area. If you have established a program, what does that program look like? Who does it involve? And we're also very, very interested in what types of tools different organizations are using when it comes to data quality. We're specifically looking at Microsoft's data quality services right now. It's a component of Microsoft's overall SQL suite. And to be honest, we haven't found a lot of good reviews online for this particular service. We know there's a lot of other tools that are available, so we're curious to know what other people are using, if they are using other data quality software. Jane, do you have anything to add to that?
I think that. I don't know how that happened.
One second, guys. Let me figure out who that is. Okay, well, hopefully they caught it. Now it got quiet again there. Okay, sorry about that.
That's all right. I think, you know, Chris have covered most everything. You know, like I said, we're looking at, you know, Marista data tool and Akatama DQ analytic tool, and just curious, you know, what other health plans have used, and we can learn from some of the pro and con, you know, that's the overall.
Great.
So
I'm sorry, before you guys go on, we actually did have a question that came through on chat. And so just for the benefit of everyone using the same language here, one of our attendees is wondering if we can define the term data steward, just to get a sense of if we're all using that in the same way.
So Health New England is using data steward, and I threw business in front of there as well. So individuals in business units, whether that is our member enrollment department, our sales department, underwriting, who are responsible for the quality of the data that those business units produce, but also responsible for defining the data in those business units and ensuring the content of that data as well. We have multiple data stewards who are part of our overall data governance committee. So when that committee meets, we're able to sort of holistically talk about data from across the organization, and we have specific stewards from specific business areas who can speak to the data in their particular area.
Uh-oh, all right. All right, we're back.
Did you guys get, Kristen, the Health New England's definition of data steward, did that make it across?
Yes, that absolutely works for me, and yes, that came across well.
Okay.
All right, so again, in response to Health New England's original post, Don Hufford was the first one who responded affirmatively, and so I asked Don if he'd be willing to kick off the sharing portion of the call, right, to talk through what Western Health Advantage has in place and the thinking behind that. So again, you know, hoping that others will chime in as well, and so Don is our warm-up, so to speak. So, Don, no pressure, but kick us off strong, okay?
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay. Well, first I thought I'd explain a little bit about our model. Western Health Advantage, we're out in Sacramento. I'm the chief medical officer. We are a completely capitated delegated model. So with that, we have six medical groups that are delegated and they're paying claims. We have five hospital systems that are capitated and paying claims. So 90% or greater of our claims are actually paid by others. And so we had to build a data warehouse to bring all this stuff in and line it up on the individual. So we realized that this made us quite vulnerable from any one data feed, particularly around HEDIS years ago. So probably as long ago as 18 years ago, we started knowing that there were going to be issues here. But at that point, we were fairly small, and we realized that the IT folks really had no idea of the outputs. What do the clinical numbers mean coming out of that? As well as the clinical people, we had really no idea what went into the data warehouse. So a long time ago, we started a weekly meeting with our QI staff that I chair and our IT staff that are related to the data warehouse. And so we've had a team in place for quite a long time and have used that approach. With that, we've over time started to develop some in-house tools. First thing on all of this is to take a look at the number of claims lines we get each month from every medical group, from every hospital, from every lab, all of those things, and then create rates on those. And so we're looking for anything that might dip. We've actually picked up a lot of things this way. When somebody changes some procedure at that medical group or hospital and suddenly a large chunk of data starts to disappear, and we're able to jump on that fairly quickly. The next thing, of course, was to start to take a look at the outputs. So if we saw that one of our HEDIS measures started to drop, we could go back and take a look at that by medical group and then tease it back. Was this a lab submission data issue? Was this a radiology submission data issue? So we could usually go back and get those feeds fixed fairly quickly. In the meetings, we also kept a running list of any issues that came up so we could discuss those things, as well as work together on the timing of builds for HEDIS along the way. We knew we needed to get a little more sophisticated in what we were doing and try to get a little more away from manual processes. So we actually built in Cognos a cube that uses the Milliman groupers. And so all of the pieces in the warehouse are trended monthly by each type of service for each medical group and for each hospital. And so if we have any concerns, we can take a look at this and look for any dips that are going on in those numbers. And then the last piece that we've sort of put together in the last few years, we started using a tool for clinical outputs from Versend called Provider Intelligence. And we're able to use that to monitor also for certain dips in data. We are now starting to get, obviously, the lab value data in from our medical groups. We are starting to get some early fields from the electronic medical record. This doesn't solve all the issues, and, you know, periodically something pops up. But probably the key to this is having the team together to really tease out that tangled thread to figure out what's the issue going on. If we need to have somebody develop a root cause analysis on any particular issue, we've got that in place now. Probably the thing that we need to do better is documentation of policies and procedures and metadata. And we've been fortunate that we've had a lot of staff that have been here a long time. And I've been here 20 years, so I've been involved in this since the beginning. But, you know, the thing that was kind of, I thought, unusual was, you know, and to let you know, is I'm not technical. I'm not an IT person. But the importance of the clinical team working with the IT team or anybody else that may be able to evaluate the outputs and know if what's coming out doesn't smell right. It sort of has been our motto is the data quality is never an endpoint. It's just a journey that never ends. And we always have to keep looking at it through the time. So it's not highly technical. We haven't purchased any particular tools. Our IT department, as we've grown, has developed different project areas, and so we have one project area that's related to the data warehouse and the data quality, and you know, there's probably 10 or 12 of us that actually sit on that from various departments. So I didn't know if that would be applicable to what health plans are doing if they pay claims primarily, but I thought maybe some of the concepts would be helpful in our approach that might be adaptable to other health plans.
Don, thanks so much. I do see that we have some questions coming in across the chat, and I am seeing those for folks. But before I turn to those questions, does anyone have any reactions or follow-up questions for Don?
Well, I feel for you, Don. I've been in a heavily capitated model before, and getting the providers to submit all of the encounters, to do so timely, and to put the effort in, especially to, you know, to make sure that the coding is as accurate as possible, that all the diagnoses are accounted for, is really difficult if it hasn't been, if you haven't written really incentives into the contract that kind of force them to do that or incentivize them to submit really complete and robust encounter data. There's almost, you know, it's almost nothing that you can do. It's like pulling teeth. So
yeah, I mean, one of the levers we've used has been pay for performance. So the IHA program out here, you know, obviously the encounter data is key for that. The other thing now is with the HCCs and risk adjustment, all the benefits of risk adjustment flow down to them. So if they don't get the data in, they're hurting themselves significantly.
Again, this is Kristen with the Alliance, and Chris with Scott and White, I know you had a follow-up question. Did you want to put that out there for the group now?
Yeah, I did. So, you know, mine backs away from, so it sounds like Don is dealing with a lot of data incompleteness, the provider simply not sending. I'm curious, you know, with H&E, are you dealing more, what is the nature, what is the largest nature of your data issues? Is it bad data? Is it missing data? Is it duplicative data? Is it just a big old mix of all of these things? Give us a little bit more idea of what you're trying to overcome.
This is Chris from Health New England. It's a little bit of all of the above and what you just said. Certainly incomplete data is something that we struggle with. Inaccurate data is another. Jang was talking about Melissa data. We're specifically digging into address data right now. I'm sure other plans who work with the Medicaid program in their state, perhaps your Medicaid program sends better data than what we deal with here in Massachusetts, but we struggle with the Medicaid data that we got from Massachusetts. It's a mess. So it really is a little bit of all of what you said, duplication, all of the above.
So I can tell y'all a little bit, if it's all right with Kristen, you know, what we do here in regards to this. This is something that we've been actively working on for 5 or 6 years now. So, Kristen, you want me to speak to that?
Absolutely, that'd be great.
So at Scott and White, when I came in, I know we had a lot of the same issues. We were heavily capitated. We're an Amisys client. Amisys is not the best system for data management or data completeness. Still isn't. But what I did find when I joined was that we had a lot of providers set up more than once. We had address data that was very inconsistent. We had flags, things like is the provider in network or out of network, or what is their status was in the configuration tables was simply not well standardized. One of the things that I carried from a prior employer that I helped develop there is basically a tool that is, it's really just a SQL scheduler, a glorified SQL scheduler. But we use it in a couple of major ways, and I call it the Enforcer tool. It's a data audit tool. So as we encountered data issues that were known to result in downstream negative impacts, whether it is causing a check run to fail, causing a provider or a claim to process incorrectly, causing any kind of downstream negative impact that we considered avoidable, we would simply take that and code it. So it might be that, hey, this flag always needs to be set to B as in boy, and if it's ever set to any other value, return that result to me. And so we have within the Enforcer probably about 100, 120 queries that run every single night and get distributed every night to people within the organization that can actually correct the data issue on a proactive basis. So as soon as they've data entered it that night, it's all being checked, 100% audit. And if we find that a data validation rule has been broken, they receive an email and it's listed out, and it basically says you need to go fix this data element before it causes any type of downstream issues. That's been a major benefit to us to help us keep our data clean. The other thing that we use it for is for doing all of our metrics reporting. We use it to monitor, you know, claims activity, you know, claims coming in from, I know that Chris from Health New England was talking about, or maybe it was Don, you know, tracking encounter volumes. So we do a lot of that. We track our top pins every single day. We track, did we receive the number of claims that we expected? Because like many of you, we're provider owned, and if our provider misses a claims batch, our single day, you know, claims receipts will drop by 4,000, 5,000, 6,000. You know, they'll drop, you know, 30%. They can be very, very significant and an impact to our operations. And so when we see that happen, we can pick up the phone and say, hey, what happened? Is there something going on that we need to know about? Is there going to be an extended delay, or did you just miss the cutoff time? And so we track a lot of details on both a daily, a weekly, and a monthly basis to monitor, you know, volumes, costs, denial rates, pay rates, auto adjudication rates, why claims are pending, all of this.
Chris, this is Kristen. Thank you for sharing. Layperson question. So the Enforcer that you're describing there, Scott and White, that was something that you built based on an experience you had at a prior organization. It's a homegrown tool. Do I understand that correctly?
So it began its life as a homegrown tool. It was transitioned over eventually to one of our business objects or Crystal Reports servers. Because it was getting to the point where it was important enough that it needed to be on an enterprise server. But yeah, I mean, it lived its first three and a half years of life running as a desktop application on a spare computer. Anything that can schedule SQL and email out results to a defined distribution list or run a basically a chunk of SQL on whatever defined cadence you need will do the trick. Even if it doesn't have email capabilities, if it can produce an Excel, you know, file or a CSV and dump it to a network drive, you can have the areas that need to go check for, hey, did anything pop last night? Is there anything in my folder? You're getting the same end result.
Okay. Great. Other questions for Chris from the group? Now, for the Health in England team, type of tool that Scott and Weiss put into place, is that the type of thing that you guys are investigating right now?
That's Chris from Health. I mean, that's exactly what we're investigating right now. So what Chris is describing, there are different tools and software that you can purchase that can help with that process. If Scott and White would be, you know, I would love to see some of the logic that they were using, maybe not all of it, but if there are specific areas that they focused in on initially, I think that would be helpful for us as we try to wrap our hands around where do we focus our initial efforts. I think address is an area that we are certainly looking at right now because of the inconsistencies, the incompleteness of address data that we have on our members, our providers, and our employers. But any logic that Scott and White could provide, I think, would be very helpful if they would be willing to do that.
Yeah, I'm certainly willing. I think y'all are still on Amesys, right?
Yes.
I was going to say, I know Jonathan over there. I think he's still with y'all. Absolutely. Reach out, and, I can kind of generate, a list of, here's what we're looking at every single night. I think you bring up some, some really good points with address. This is something that we have, more recently started paying a lot more attention to, especially with risk adjustment, with moving to more of a so we've recently expanded past our Central Texas old footprint. We're now working up in Dallas due to, a merger that happened a few years ago. And we are dealing with multiple CMS pricing regions now. And so we're having to, to deal with, okay, well, I've got to send a 9-digit zip to Burgess to get the pricing back, not just a 5-digit. That has proven problematic for us and something that we're looking, we're working with our print vendor. Print vendors generally have, NCOA licenses because they've got to make sure that addresses are properly formatted. And so we're in talks with our print vendor to basically do a big batch and then figure out a way to manage address quality and completeness on a daily or weekly or monthly kind of reconciliation basis in as automated a fashion as possible so that we can get things like make sure that the apartment number is there, that or the suite number is there, that the zip code is a full 9 digits so that when the claim comes back from our Medicare pricing engine that it doesn't get hung up and require somebody to manually go in and review or Google the address and get the 9-digit zip and things like that. So it's address is probably the most difficult because there's such a high volume of address records and there's so many ways to mess up an address. But to answer your original question, yeah, just reach out to Kristen and she'll get you my email address, and I'm happy to discuss further with you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, I didn't offer that, Kristen.
Right? So I went ahead and I put something on the screen for those of you that are on the visual. I'm wondering who else might want to see some more details.
I am happy to, though, so.
I figured, Chris. So far you have 13 yeses, 16 yeses, 17 yeses. So I think rather than just do a one-off, how about if we schedule another value call like this one where we can do like a screen share, that type of thing, Chris? You and I can talk about details offline, and that way folks can participate, and so that way you can do it all in one fell swoop for the group. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, absolutely.
23 yeses. Look at that. You're a popular guy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is great. So I do want to turn my attention to a question that came in on the chat. One of the attendees on the chat asked, what are plans C as the percentage of contracted facilities like labs and provider offices that they're sharing data files with? Any feedback from the group?
You mean are we talking HL7 data, actual direct feeds from the EMR?
That's a great question. Linda, are you able to offer any color to augment your question there over the audio? Let me see if I can find Linda. I may have inadvertently muted her.
Sorry about that. I pressed the unmute and didn't get the other little microphone thing. Okay. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. You sound loud and clear.
Okay, great. So we're seeing some difficulty with gaining data feeds from our labs, and also we'd like to start that with the provider offices that we don't have direct access to their medical records with. Are any other plans seeing trouble with receiving those direct data feeds? No? Okay.
We're not really doing a lot of gathering of medical records today except for, explicit purposes for chart reviews. And I think that our HEDIS unit is probably doing, that to some extent. But I think it's more targeted than a broad feed in. So, and our health system is working on a large scale HIE, and they make up about 60% of our network. And I think the HIE probably extends that to about 80 to 85% through the Quality Alliance ACO, so that's how they're kind of tackling that. But it's not hard tied into our claims data or our health plan specific data warehouse.
Okay, I guess my other question was related to the ACO providers, and someone mentioned using incentives, to increase the quality initiatives. How are you validating that what the ACO provider or the contracted provider, how are you validating the data that they're saying, the rates that they're saying they have for each, HEDIS measure?
Hi, this is Scott Dwight, Health Plan again. I work on the risk adjustment side, but it's the same sort of process with our ACO and with our aligned providers. We have sort of a partnership with our ACO, and they get the HEDIS data for us from our aligned contracted providers. And as far as risk adjustment goes, we feel responsible to do a sort of a compliance activity where we audit a certain percentage of those records ourselves to verify that they're coding in the way that we would want, or that they're capturing data in the way that we would want.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Western Health, we are starting to get some of the feeds from the EMR. We're getting blood pressure from some of the groups. We're getting height and weight and a few things like that. We're also starting to get race, ethnicity, and language data so we can evaluate for disparities. We've been getting LOINC codes from most of our groups. We're still working on one group that's left, but with that we're getting a lot of values in there as well. So we've had some good success. A lot of that is it's to their benefit on pay for performance, and that stuff does get spot audited by our HEDIS auditor, and then there's an audit that's specific to the California P4P program too.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Teresa with Geisinger Health Plan, and we're also beginning to gather lab data feeds and electronic health record data feeds as well. And we've implemented a couple of different initiatives. So we use it along with our case management, identifying patients who may be at risk and going out to grab attributed patients and looking at them there. We also have implemented an education, a risk adjustment, voter education program where we actually go out to our provider sites and educate them on the coding that they need to do. And at that time, if we identify that, we build a relationship and then identify if we can work together to get those data feeds to the health plan so that we can use it there, then we have on-site coders to also go through and evaluate that. Lab data has been a little bit trickier just because there's so many. We're in a rural area, and we have so many smaller onesies and twosies providers out there who sometimes do their own labs in office as well as use local processing, not necessarily the hospital or any of the big labs out there to do their data. So it's been we're building a program to see if we can, you know, reach out to them one by one through, you know, provider network management and the risk adjustment coding educators and incentivizing them through our PQS, our quality initiatives.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, is – oh, did I just put it on?
No, you're –
okay, can I ask you, are these contracted providers or employed providers?
Both, contracted.
Okay, so your contracted providers are giving you an EMR fee?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Do you have an OCA or just a regular BAA?
BAA.
Okay.
So some of these are strategic partners in our market.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is Kristen again with the Alliance. So we definitely still have some time left us in the call, and, you know, we did, again, have 37 organizations. So I'm going to guess there's others on the line that may have other perspectives on these topics. Anyone else willing to share some of the elements you're putting in place or some of the challenges you may be facing that you can raise for the group? All right, well, while you guys are thinking and building up your courage to speak out over the phone, I have a question as well. Right now, I'm developing two different value visits, and it seems to me that this particular topic, when it came across the discussion forum, relates to each of those value visits in different ways. And so I wanted to kind of litmus test this with the group a little bit. We are planning a clinical informatics value visit that'll be in November in Orlando. That event is definitely happening. We have the hotel booked and everything. And in fact, we do have some planning calls specific for that value visit. And for those of you who've never done a planning call with us before, basically it's an open call where the Alliance staff share some of the session topics and themes that we're thinking about incorporating into that 3-day face-to-face visit. And then we look for feedback and ideas and suggestions from our member plans to be sure that that value visit focuses in on the topics that matter most to all of you. In addition to that value visit, I'm also working on an event that's focused on risk management, vendor oversight, and cybersecurity. And while, of course, the focus of today's conversation has been more on, you know, getting the data to a point that you're able to use it in the meaningful ways that all of you are needing to use that data to inform your value-based purchasing initiatives, make sure that your addresses are clean, support your disease management efforts and risk adjustment efforts, et cetera. But when we talk about data governance, data quality, the business associate agreements, et cetera, it seems to me there's a component here that deals with data security. And so I'm wondering, for those of you on the line, how much of your role touches on that topic? You know, to what extent do you interact with the security officer or folks who have responsibility for data security? Is that a topic that is meaningful or appeals to this group, or is that really a different group of stakeholders? Just wanting to get that litmus test again.
This is Chris from Health New England. So we do have some representation from our compliance department in our data governance committee. It is an important risk management is an important concept. Right now, we're still dealing with very fundamental concerns around how we control data internally and the processes that we have around it. So it certainly is not it hasn't been a major topic of conversation for us this year, but I think we're also at a different phase perhaps than other individuals. But overall, as an organization, exchange of data with third parties has certainly accelerated. It seems like it's been accelerating the past couple of years. So we have been putting additional rules in place which do touch on data governance. And what we will share, what we won't share, and that has involved very heavily our compliance department.
Very helpful. Thanks. And, Chris, offline, I'm going to send you an email to follow up. Can you connect me with that individual that I could speak with about that particular topic in more detail?
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. Feedback from others?
I was going to offer, I guess, similar feedback is that my concerns are, generally speaking, more operational in nature. I know that our organization at large is focused on information security with, you know, an increasing numbers of hacks and attempts, obviously. They're paying a lot more attention to our third-party vendors that are sitting on mountains of our data, services that are, you know, hosting. So there's a lot of attention there, but it's not in my wheelhouse, so to speak. I'm more focused on core system data integrity and going out to up to the point of our data warehouse.
Thanks, Chris. Really helpful. And I think there was one more voice that was going to chime in there.
Again, it's Teresa from Geisinger Health Plan. We also have our compliance office and security office heavily involved in our data governance initiative here. We're working on an enterprise information management platform, and so we're getting data from the system as well as the health plan, and we're trying to control that and making sure that, like I said, compliance and security are heavily involved in these. And that goes as far as working with hyper-protected data. That's, you know, to ensure that we don't have HIPAA breaches, making sure that we are implementing minimum necessary, that those are written into policies and procedures, and also informing our data stewards of these. We use Qlik as a data visualization platform that sits on top of our enterprise data warehouse. And so we're now looking at, you know, how do you lock down? You don't want to be so stringent that you're locking down access to data and risking losing the ability to do innovative analytics. You know, you have to you got to walk hand in hand with that, and also, you know, working with minimum necessary. So we're having a lot of conversations right now about what does that look like and how is that implemented.
Teresa, is that something that's in your wheelhouse, and or can I follow up with you about folks there on Geisinger's team that I could explore that topic further?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you. Then the other item I want to mention, and again, for those of you who are on the visual, no worries for those that are on audio only, I'm just going to pop into the chat box two links. We have upcoming, I mentioned planning calls. So we do have two planning calls for clinical informatics, which that sounds like that's in everyone's wheelhouse because that's really what we've been talking about today, right, is data quality and governance to support informatics efforts. So tomorrow we have a planning call. If you would like to join that and hear about what we're planning for our Orlando Valley visit, and if you're not able to join us tomorrow, we have a second planning call on August 11th. And at the August 11th event, Sarah Neese, my colleague here at the Alliance, and I hope to have a draft agenda or at least an outline of topics to run by the group. This topic is just, it's so big, as I'm sure all of you know, that to try to decide, you know, what is the specific themes that we're going to cover at that meeting, it's definitely really, it's really challenging. So we want to make sure we get it right, which is why we're doing two planning calls. So I invite everyone on this team and others in your organization to have responsibility for clinical informatics, decision support, and population health initiatives. Please do join us for those planning calls. We really appreciate having the ideas and your voices. So we have a little bit less than 10 minutes left to us today, so let me open up another question for the group to respond to, and that is, you know, today's call was, we scheduled it because there was a question and a lot of people responded to that thread, and of course that discussion forum is available to all of you anytime via the HealthSpend Alliance website, and that's a great way to get really quick responses from your peers that are hopefully actionable fairly immediately. To augment that, is it of interest to this group to have a informal value call like this one where there's no formal presentation, there's no agenda, we're just bringing together a group of people that have a scope of responsibility similar to your own, and then it's an open forum where you can ask questions, weigh ideas, get recommendations for vendors or platforms, or share a challenge and see if you can get some feedback from your colleagues. We could do it as often as once a month. We could do it once a quarter. Somewhere in between. Any feedback or suggestions there?
I like the open forums. The getting a cadence could be difficult if people aren't acutely aware of what's going to be under discussion.
Right.
I think that's where you start to run into maybe a little bit of concern. Because now that you've gotten some, you know, some feedback and hear what other people are doing, I don't know, is hearing that another two or three times beneficial? That's where it starts to get tricky. But I definitely do like at least the follow-up from a forum conversation to have at least one or maybe two of these. So
that's really helpful. Thank you. And Nancy also chimed in that it's the topic of the call that drives whether or not you show up. It's hard just to show up if you're not sure if it's a good use of your time. That's really helpful feedback. So then other feedback from the group, anyone else feel differently or just want to validate or further support that perspective?
I felt that this was really helpful to hear what other people were doing.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then from your perspective, do you feel like having an open call where, you know, it might be that we don't have a set theme for the call, but you know that you're going to have this group or a similar group on the phone, is that a good use of an hour, you know, once every 6 weeks? Or is that a little bit too tenuous to block off on your calendar?
That's probably a bit too tenuous for me.
Yeah, fair enough.
If we do have a few minutes left, if you don't mind my kind of interjecting and asking a kind of a specific question of the group, as I mentioned earlier, and I know at least one of the group was kind of lamenting address data, does anybody on the call feel like they do have a good method for ensuring address quality? And if so, could they explain how they've gotten there and what they've done? I guess everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah, we wrestle with it periodically here as well.
SumaCare does as well.
It's a matter of volume. I mean, every single claim coming in has three or four addresses on it. Mm-hmm. Every provider could have, you know, two or three addresses for where they bill from, where they practice. So it's just it's a volume. It's a volume issue.
I remember years ago when we first started the data warehouse, we noticed that there were over 100 ways in the data that Sacramento was spelled, including blah blah.
Yeah, the address of our hospital on 31st Street had I think 137 unique variations of that address in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So can I ask, do you have a provider registry, and are you use what platform do you use for that?
Provider registry. We have a provider directory. Obviously, now that only handles just the in-network and. We don't today have any automated feed from our provider credentialing system over to our core claims system. So the data is being, you know, fed from the provider over to the provider credentialing team, usually by hand or by spreadsheet, and then again extracted and submitted down to configuration where it's being rekeyed. Most of our addresses, though, you know, that's predominantly going to be physical address or, you know, physical location. Mm-hmm. We're also having to deal with a lot of billing addresses that wouldn't be necessarily in the credentialing data, would only come across on claims. And generally speaking, we are, you know, we're taking it as is, coming from claims. We've not found a good way to insert an address, either like a CAS or an NCOA type process, into the front end of the claims process, because it just becomes very, I guess, very expensive, even if you're just paying a couple of cents per record, to be able to do that without interrupting either the efficiency of the system or costing you a lot of money to clean up a lot of addresses that aren't necessarily even relevant, especially for a contracted provider. We're not going to reload their address, you know, every single time they submit a claim. It's just not – so finding that balance has proven quite challenging, I would say. And that's where we're kind of looking at potential batch processes to send this, ship this data off, have it standardized and run through the NCOA, National Change of Address, so that we at least have properly formatted addresses. We know whether they are deliverable or not, whether there's been a change of address that we need to update. And then the question becomes, if it does come back as undeliverable, what do we do with it?
That's
going to create a lot of follow-up work, and I'm not entirely sure where to go with it from there, other than knowing, hey, this address is invalid.
Yeah, I believe California is in the midst of getting a sort of common vendor for a provider registry. A few years ago, the state legislatures passed the laws that required validation every month by every health plan, which is going to be overwhelming to provider offices. So now there's a coalition trying to come up with a system where they can validate to one vendor, and then the health plans can go to that vendor. So it's still in process. It's a massive scramble to try to meet this new law. And but, you know, California, they pass a law for everything. What can I say?
Well, of course, you know, you get forward to looking forward to if your address doesn't match what they have on record with Medicaid, then you're just wrong. So.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. This is Kristen again with the Alliance, and we are up at the end of the hour. I really enjoyed moderating this call today. I hope that you all found it useful. There's a few of you that I asked if I can follow up individually, and I will do so. It helps me on some other topics I'm working on. And then, Chris, you and I definitely have a date. I will send you some options that we can schedule a case study so that the 27 people who all said yes have a chance to dive in deep to that nightly enforcer that you're running. And then if folks have any other feedback, for those of you who are on the visual, when you log off, there's a one-question survey. Feel free to give any feedback there or suggestions. And for now, I will not plan on scheduling a standing call for this group, but definitely, again, use that online discussion forum. And whenever you all have a topic that you want to gather around and actually discuss, just like this one, we will endeavor to schedule that call. Thanks again for your time, and I hope to see everyone again, either in person or virtually. Have a wonderful afternoon, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.